And good morning and welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio. And opening up tomorrow night in the Marjorie Lyons Playhouse, it's a new production of Henrik Ibsen's play, The Enemy of the People. And joining me now in our Knoll Foundation studios are Logan Sledge, who directs this production, along with Charlie Rapolo, who is going to be playing the mayor, Peter Stockman, that is, and P.J. Souther, who is playing the mayor's brother, Dr. Thomas Stockman, in this play. And, let's just see, protagonist, antagonist, retagonist, it's all going to happen here on the Marjorie Lyons Playhouse stage. So, Logan, Charlie, and P.J., thanks for joining me this morning.
Thanks so much for having us,
Happy
Bill.
To be here.
So, let's go into a little bit of Ibsen. Can you tell us a little bit of the history about this writer? For those who don't know, we were just playing Peer Gynt, which is famous music one of his plays, but written by Grieg. He wasn't a composer. Ibsen was a writer.
Right.
And he tended to write things that ticked people off occasionally.
Yeah, I mean, you, in many ways, I suppose you could think of Ibsen as a composer.
Right.
I think most people, when they associate Ibsen with as being basically the father of modernism and modern realism, psychological realism, and it was, we remember these great writers because they make a mark, and his mark was this introduction of a completely new way of dealing with theater and of what we're talking about and seeing when we go and watch a live theater performance, and it was shocking. We might get into this. I suspect we will. The play that we're working on, An Enemy of the People, was in fact written in response to an earlier play of his, Ghosts,
right?
Which dealt with things that were absolutely shocking and seen as inappropriate
and taboo in a way.
Absolutely,
the discussion
taboo
of them was taboo.
Yes.
Syphilis and adultery and a whole like of things that in the 1800s was the Victorian era, not in his country, but around, much of the modern world.
Absolutely. The classic example with Ibsen, obviously, is the slamming of the door from Nora at the end of Doll's House.
Right.
That noise reverberates still, throughout theaters across the world, in fact. And it was a noise that really left its mark, to have a woman, Nora, leaving her family to go and discover herself and find out who she really is as a person. That's the kind of stuff that we know Ibsen for. So this play is no different.
And breaking down those boundaries, because back then you were going to follow the path set for you by your family.
Right.
And it was all about family honor and no individuality, no struggle to be yourself or your real person.
Right. And some people, understandably, will read Ibsen with a view. It might be a feminist view, for example, in Doll's House. But Ibsen kind of refuted that while he was alive and said, I'm not, advocating necessarily on a gender basis. What I'm talking about is how this married couple does not communicate with each other. So it wasn't, Nora's obviously, the protagonist in that show, and kind of the hero of the show, as it were, but he was talking about a larger discussion, I think. So,
and he also, he was an iconoclast, but he was fair. He even blasted some of his own reformist leanings. So he took issue with everybody trying to push other people around, basically, and
absolutely
tell other people what to do. So let's get into the gist of this play. This is a play called Enemy of the People, and exactly what is the enemy of the people in this play, if you were to bear that out? PJ, give us it.
Well, the enemy of the people is, as Ibsen goes into it, the person that goes against the standard, the societal norm of people. And in this play, I'd say that would be Thomas, my character, Thomas Stockman, who decides to support, to push this independent ideology when everyone is against him. And
even his family at one point.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And just the struggle that goes along with that. There's a lot of times where, even as an independent, he goes against manipulation, not only seeing it towards the public and the community as a whole, but manipulation against himself, mm-hmm. and how that strife can tears into his family. At one point, he starts speaking against his family, and in that same scene, he finds out that he may have been on the wrong side. Mm-hmm. But the underlying message, the thing he's fighting for, is individualism. That's what he wants is the truth.
Yeah.
And so that's what he feels is that the higher ups, the people in power, aren't pushing for, that they will hold power even if they have to skew the truth a little bit, and
or a lot.
And the manipulation that comes with that.
Yeah, there's something refreshing, appealing, and also somewhat repulsive in our society, I think, today, to see a person like Dr. Thomas Stockman, who really draws a hard line.
Right.
You know, is principled in the extreme. Mm-hmm. There is no give and take. There is no, well, maybe. There is no consideration for negotiation or you know, potentially welcoming this other side. I mean, it is what it is. This is the truth. And he even says in the play, I'm willing to hang for my convictions.
Okay.
And it's intense.
So let's get into the substance of the play. What are his convictions? This has to do with water, right? And the town trying to make itself as a place to come for these healing. So, you know, are they really healing waters?
So what it boils down to is that Thomas Stockman has dreamed up this health institute because their town is known for being an incredibly healthy place to be. And he creates this institute to bring people from all around the world to expand their horizons, meet new people from all around. And he later finds that the water itself has been contaminated with this infectious disease. And he does his own research, he gets other opinions on it, and he finds it to be the truth. And when he goes and starts speaking out about it, he's met with backlash. Mostly that it's the big thing is that this institute is about to open.
Mm-hmm.
And this has come out just before the opening of this. And a lot of money has gone into this springs. A lot of high up people have put their money on the line for this institute to become popular. And then Thomas comes out saying that it's going to fail, that it's being built on a diseased water.
Right.
So that's where we get into the morality. You know, it's right and wrong is skewed in this, because from my end, I see that they're just trying to cover themselves up, trying to manipulate the truth. But on Peter's end, on my brother's end, mm-hmm. it's different.
So what do you think?
Well, from my point of view, from Peter's point of view, really, is that Dr. Stockman is coming out with all these convictions, and this has the potential, quite literally, to ruin the town forever. I say that this town is just on the verge of becoming internationally known as a resort, and will be right. One of the richest and most beautiful resort towns in the world, and he's coming out here right before we get to that point. And he's ruining the whole thing. He's saying that these springs will these springs are dangerous, and it'll turn away every single visitor that we have. And from Peter's point of view, I think it's not really trying. Well, it is covering it up. But from Peter's point of view, it's not trying to cover it up. It's trying to make the town. How do I put this?
Yeah, he's trying to do damage control.
He's trying to do damage control. He's just. Please be quiet.
Yeah.
We'll handle it quietly.
Right.
Peter Thomas wants to go out and tell everyone that the water's poisoned, but Peter wants to do it behind the curtain. He wants to make everything, you know, smooth and let all the visitors not know about the water, yet still fix the water. It's just, he doesn't like Thomas's way of going about it.
And I view it as a trick.
Right.
To me, to my character, it seems like he's just trying to protect himself. Because in the play, we find out that him and his administration were the ones that built this institute where it is,
right,
at the water.
Even though you warned them that there was going to be a potential problem.
Right.
And that's the big wall in front of Thomas's eyes is, in my opinion, looking at my character, is he fights so hard that it sometimes becomes hard for him to look at the other side of the spectrum.
Right.
And I think that's something that gets explored a lot, is looking at someone else's point of view, or rather, well, the lack thereof, mm-hmm, honestly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Step away from your own and see it from the other. Yeah, I'm thinking of two modern movie analogies. We had talked beforehand about Jaws. Okay, mm-hmm. The mayor didn't want to say shark in the water because that's going right. to drive all the tourists away.
Exactly.
The sheriff is like, yeah, but I've got a couple of people eaten, so we got a problem here, and nobody wants to deal with the issue until, of course, it's too late. And then not Volcano, but Dante's Peak, you know,
right.
the guy goes in, I'm trying to think of the character's the actor's name, and I can't think.
Is it Pierce Brosnan?
Pierce Brosnan. Yeah, yeah, he goes in and he's paranoid. He thinks the volcano's going to explode, but his boss comes and says, no, we don't want to create a panic because that could ruin the town. Let's be sure, which I understand, and I take, you know, I don't take umbrage with that. I think that's a good thing. But then the town ends up being destroyed anyways, and of course that guy ends up losing his life in it. So, you know, sometimes things are not what they seem, and sometimes we don't want to see things the way they seem because that's going to hurt us and hurt our vested interest, and we're trying to find our way around it, it seems. So let's get into the other characters in this play quickly, and let's go through the cast. Who is playing in this? We've got, Charlie, you are the mayor, so mm-hmm. congratulations on your election,
oh, thank
by the
you.
Way. And, well, you graduated medical school, so you're at the top of your class there, P.J. Souther. Who else is in this play?
Well, it's a large cast. I think we're at 18, 17 students, and one community actor, Jim Coles. Mm-hmm. So, and he's playing Morton Keel, who has a pivotal scene at the end of the show where he comes in to make one sort of final offer to Stockman. It's viewed as one of these sort of, you know, real temptation moments mm-hmm. there. It is a large cast, and it's across our spectrum. We've got several incoming freshmen that are in the show. And then we've got, you know, juniors and seniors and on up. So Kennedy Wiltshire plays Catherine Stockman, who, you know, she presents this to PJ's character, Thomas. And it's one of the things that's kind of striking about it is I like plays that have characters that are confronted with a moral dilemma,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Stockman really has this moral dilemma in this show, because if he does, Catherine's trying to get it through to his head. If he does continue on this path, you know, what about his responsibility to his family, to his children, and what might potentially happen to them? Something that Peter also warns him about.
He could ruin the town and ruin his own
and
career.
And his career and his family, and they have nothing if they're fired, and they've already had a hard existence that they've kind of come back from. So there's all that in play. And then you have Lonnie. Zeno, who is not a theater major. It's one of the other cool things about what we do is we, you know, bring in other students from across the campus.
Right.
And she is playing Ms. Aslickson, who is, you know, she's head of the small business people. You can think of her almost as a union leader of sorts.
Right.
And she's also, right now anyway, footing the bill for the printing press. So she's got the purse strings there. You have Hofstad, who is played by Tyler Garrett, who's a sophomore student, and he is doing a fine job, and he basically has his own agenda. And that's another thing that's so interesting about the play is all these individual agendas. Initially, they're unified, and they're unified behind Stockman. And then what you see is everybody starts running for the exits because it's all about their own agendas,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it becomes survival and personal interests trump everything else. So
when the lights come on, the mice scurry away to their little corners.
Don't I know it.
Peter really offers. So at the very beginning, we said that it was very unified on Stockman's side, and Peter, he really gives reasons to not be unified, and everyone's like, oh, this is dangerous. It's risky. We can't do this. And so pretty much everyone is just like, I can't do this anymore. And they start running away whenever they see something, an easier path to take. And that's just kind of, that's the kind of proof that the solid majority maybe isn't always right and stuff like that.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, yeah. Whenever we get into the big act two, scene one scene, I get so impassioned discussing the state of the springs, and at one point I look at this mob of people around me and I say, I understand that it may cost a lot, it's inconvenient, it may be risky that other towns could get the jump on us while we rebuild, but the water is poisoned. Mm-hmm. We, at the end of the day, we are poisoning people. And the great thing about that moment is We're talking to everybody. It's that's something I love with the direction of this show, is in this specific scene, we're not only addressing our actors, we're addressing the entire crowd. Charlie over here, Thomas and Peter, we are addressing the entire audience. And I love bringing in the audience to make this less of a show, more of an experience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
honestly,
it becomes very interactive in that moment. Okay. And we break the fourth wall, and they become really a part of the action. And we're already doing the show in the round, so there's, you know, that sense. It's a different right. audience experience where you're, you know, watching this thing like you would be watching a sporting event or a boxing match or something. So it's I like the intensity that sort of brings to the production. So,
yeah, there's a couple of quotes in the press release, and I'm going to quote from you, Logan. This play is at once both scathing indictment of political corruption and an inherent corruptibility of the body politic, and it's also a grim warning about the dangers of denying empirical facts.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, and well, you know, I mean, that is the story of, I think, reality, is we will deny empirical facts if they're going to gore our ox, until the time when we realize saving the ox is going to gore our life. And so all mm-hmm. of a sudden, you know, it's, do I go to prison for doing this, or do I save myself? And that's when all of those scales from the eyes, to use a biblical metaphor, yeah, fall out.
Right. There have been some great psychology studies, actually, about the brain's ability to deny fact, empirical evidence, when we have an emotional desire to do so. And there's also a great discussion in the play about what is fact. Mm-hmm. Peter at one point is in the press off the printing office, and he says, you know, you'll forgive me for speaking about facts in a newspaper office. And I'm telling you, this play is kind of ripped from the headlines, as they say. And,
sounds like Pontius Pilate, but right. What is truth? You know, I mean,
right. So that really is. I tend to fall into the camp that thinks that is up for discussion in this play.
Okay.
Which is also a fun element for the audience to consider.
Yeah. Where I grew up, there was, and I've learned this through my life, facts are subject to change
right.
with new data and information, and everything you know about the truth is subject to change. Because, you know, even in today's science, the latest story, maybe red meat is okay for you. I don't know, as the yeah. studies go on and we learn more and more and more about things, sometimes we jump to conclusions before all the facts
are
in. Oh,
you aren't kidding, Bill. My hope really with this is that I don't want people to leave the audience going, how could they do that to Thomas Stockman, and he's right. the hero of the play. I want people to really wonder, like, God, did he do the right thing?
Right.
Was he doing the right thing?
Yeah.
You know, that's way more interesting to me.
And those are the questions that you always, until all the facts are in, you can do damage. Again, Dante's Peak, if it hadn't been an actual, volcano erupting,
right.
if the story had played out differently, then the guy who cried wolf would have been the villain instead of the savior, and everybody else, the town would have gone bankrupt. They would have mm-hmm. lost all their factory and the jobs that they're trying to do and everything that they had worked for.
And that's something
that's a precipice,
We, Charlie and I have gone into discussion on and on, getting into our characters, we would sit down doing the character building, mm-hmm. the back scene, the behind the scenes work, and discuss, am I really right? Is he really wrong? Am I really wrong? Is he really right? And I have we found an answer yet?
No, we haven't. And that's like, that's why it's really good to go into these kind of plays without discussing the absolute fact of good and evil.
Right.
Because Peter has his way. He's not doing this to be evil. He's doing this because he believes that this is right. And we've talked about this, like he said, countless times. Mm-hmm. Like, is he right? And it doesn't, you know, I'm not going to spoil anything, but the play doesn't wrap up. There's not a conclusion. There's not a resolution to this problem. It's just, it is what it is.
Right.
And like, look in the mirror, see, this is you. And this is what's happening. And it's really interesting to see that maybe, you know, Dr. Thomas Stockman, although he may have the most lines in the play, maybe isn't the hero of the play, because there's no real hero to this play.
And there's a line from a great old movie with Sean Connery. The line between ecstatic vision and sinful frenzy is all too brief. Meaning you can be a reformer, mm-hmm. but then you can step over the edge and you actually become the terror. Rather than the person trying to right the system, you become the person who is making it all wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's a careful line. And, you know, you see that play out in modern politics all the time. There are those who push too far. And all of a sudden they create havoc, and they don't realize that they've become the problem, not the solution.
That's a
curious problem.
It absolutely is. I would say the only definitive thing that I hope people would take away from the show is the how critical it is to think for yourself.
Right.
That, I Absolutely. Think, is kind of an absolute. I don't think the play really messes around with that.
Yeah.
I think it is saying, look what happens when we, you know, right now we talk about this cancel culture that we live in, and people, you know, kind of draw their lines and mm-hmm. get into their camps. It's very tribal. And I think this play does resoundingly say, think for yourself.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Think
for yourself.
And also criticize yourself.
Absolutely.
You know, take a moment and ask yourself, okay, this is what I think. But am I really on solid ground? Mm-hmm. And challenge mm-hmm. yourself, you know, challenge your own thought and your own thinking.
Yeah, that's a great follow-up.
Self-reflection is very, very important, even if you really honestly believe you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Truth can come along and just smack that right out of you.
Well, and it's so cool, too, because as a college, right, I mean, these are right. all in line with our kind of overall curricular mm-hmm. goals and the things that we're trying to engender in our students
right.
is the very things that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Ways of thinking, ways of knowing, reflection, self-assessment, all of those things. So it's a cool play yeah. for that reason, too.
Yeah, the adage, this is what we know so far, should always be ingrained, because mm-hmm. tomorrow's going to reveal new stuff, and what we know so far could change drastically.
Right.
So let's get to the icon of the tickets. How do folks find tickets, and what are the shows?
Yes, very good. So we open, as you said, tomorrow night, and we run October 3rd through 5th at 7:30 p.m. I recommend arriving no later than 15 minutes prior to that, because we're in our black box configuration,
right.
so getting seated and everything is a little trickier. And then we run October 6th at 2 p.m. for that matinee. People can call 869-5242 and leave a message to reserve a ticket, and it will be reserved. Or they can go online, www.centenary.edu/MLP tickets.
All right. And do you have any final thoughts you want to share with folks?
I just hope people will come in droves, because I think it's a very important play and some important subject matter. And the cast is doing such a strong job, and the entire production team. So it's a great way to kick off our season. Mm-hmm. And we hope to join you soon to talk about our next play.
All right. Yeah. Cool. So set all of your presuppositions aside. Come out and enjoy the play and support the Centenary as college theater students in their production of this. So Logan and Charlie and PJ, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Bill.
You so much.
You bet. That was Logan Sledge and Charlie Rapolo, along with PJ Souther, and they all are from the Marjorie Lyons Playhouse, and they joined me this morning in our Knoll Foundation studios to discuss their new production of Henrik Ibsen's play An Enemy of the People, which opens up tomorrow night, October October 3rd at 7:30 p.m. in the Marjorie Lyons Playhouse on the campus of Centenary College. Other performance dates include Friday and Saturday, October 4th and 5th at 7:30, and Sunday, October 6th at 2 p.m. For ticket details, go to Marjorie Lyons Playhouse online or call 318-869-5242. That's 318-869-5242. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight, and for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Beckett.